In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Hey, I'm Jared.
And I'm Rick.
And this is Modern Apocrypha. And actually, this is take two of the subject. And it's because we were getting some weird internet issues, which is always sort of raises the question of whether there's enemy interference going on, which wouldn't be surprising because the topic of today's conversation is anti-Semitism and where it stems from and where it leads and what the valid and, you know, reasonable views of the whole situation are, because there are a million ways you could look at this, and most people have problems getting outside of this sort of almost dialectic perspective where, oh, Israel is good, Israel is bad, and that really doesn't look into things deeply enough to give you the right way of seeing things. So the first thing that we ought to cover here is where Israel comes from. Israel is a nation that was created by God out of, I think it was Ur of the Chaldees. He called Abram and he said, I'm going to make a great nation out of you. I'm going to take your children and make a never-ending pact, an everlasting agreement with them, a covenant with no close date, that what we will do is I'll give you this land and I will be your God and you are my inheritance among the nations. And that was how Israel began. Abraham begat Isaac, Isaac Jacob. Jacob had lots of kids, lots of women, lots of dysfunction. God still blessed the family. And we end up, you know, a few hundred years later with Israel for the first time coming into their land as a nation. And that land is the current location of Israel in the world. And the first thing that you always think of when anti-Semitism comes up is the Nazis, right? Is the what happened with the Holocaust back in the 1940s, 1930s and 40s. And you made the point that this wasn't just something that went on in Germany, that there was a huge amount of pressure all across Northern Europe pushing the Jews out of where they were. And you were right. That actually brought up an interesting topic that if you go to Daniel and you're using the original non-corrupted Jewish calendar that agrees with the one in the Dead Sea Scrolls, that there are some prophecies about when Israel will return to their land and become a nation again. And guess what? It happened the day that Israel was reformed in the 1940s. And that's kind of amazing, right? So we know that this was an act of God because this is in the Bible, which sort of takes us to where the sources of anti-Semitism are. You got anything to add here before I sort of dive into that?
Just to reiterate where we are at on that, the correct calendar that we are speaking of is the solar calendar of the Jewish people that was discovered from the Dead Sea Scrolls and the anniversary of High Holy Days that it would fall on, not given as a date, but given as a anniversary of a Passover, an anniversary of a holy day. And so on that anniversary of the holy day mentioned in the prophecy, it did happen, according to the solar calendar they were using when the prophecy was given.
I think that's correct. I'm not going
I
to...
Yeah, you're correct. That's what you're...
I know, and I'm thinking that that's what it said, and I'm like...
That is...
So as far as I know, that's what I had heard too. There's a very interesting... I'll try to drop a link. We could try to drop a link to that in the show notes, actually, to that conversation, because that'd be interesting for people seeing that about the Jewish calendar. Sure. It was another podcast, a very interesting subject. Anyway, so that being the case, one of the things that we discover is that whenever there's anti-Semitism somewhere, it always comes from the enemy. because Israel is God's inheritance among the nations, is God's chosen nation, when you find anti-Semitism, it's always because the enemy is coming out against God's people. That's the way it is. So back in the time of the Nazis, what they did was people called Hitler a Christian. They try to do that today, but the reality is the Nazi worldview was based in mystery religion, which is a sort of in a Gnostic vein of thought. And you can't actually honestly call it Christian. It was not. And if you look into what all was going on at the time, they were actually consulting with evil spirits to do a lot of the things they did. They were trying to contact aliens and extra-dimensional beings, and you can look into, I can't remember the name of the group now, but the Vril Society. Oh my gosh, that's a rabbit hole that you can dive down if you ever want to. There's some craziness there, but it is very much a witchcraft and occult based thing that they dove into, and that was behind that rising to power. And National Socialism is not a right-wing phenomenon, it's a left-wing phenomenon, as is communism. They both come from the same sort of place and go in the same sort of direction, and they're both evil. And so anti-Semitism from that side looks that way. There is Christian anti-Semitism as well. And so when you look into Christian nationalism, as is appropriate to call it, it's bearing God's name in vain. But one of the things they do is they have this replacement theology thing going on. Replacement theology asserts that when Christ created the church, all of the promises that God had given to the nation of Israel immediately sort of were replaced by the church. The church replaced the nation of Israel and all of those promises, and Israel is no longer God's chosen people. They're just, you know, unchristian schmucks running around doing terrible things, is sort of the way they tend to look at it. And so the anti-Semitism that comes in there is, I guess you could call it a right-wing anti-Semitism, but whatever it is, it's anti-Semitism, and it's a good indication that the enemy's at work in that area.
It comes to mind here, and I'm remembering something that we didn't go through the first time, that listening to Jewish historians in Israel now, these are just college professors, mm-hmm. they remember what it was to be German post-World War One, and the coming together, and we were all one thing, and we needed to be just German. And the problem was, to be a Jew, you could be a German Jew, you could be a Russian Jew, but you couldn't separate out your heritage. It was against your religion to separate out your heritage. And the demand, just like the demand today of the flattening out of opinion to make sure that everyone says the same thing, right? And the most detrimental thing to the German communist movement was that there is this group that is going to count themselves separate. No matter what we do, they will count themselves separate, and that's not going to be allowed. That's the way that the Jews remember the history, is that they were singled out because they would never allow themselves to not be counted separately.
Interesting. Well, and, you know, that's totally fair. You know, again, what happened at the time was obviously an act of God pushing the Jews out of these nations of Europe so that they could come to Israel. I'm not saying what the Germans did was an act of God, but I'm saying that Israel reforming in its ancestral homeland was an act of God very much. Anyway, so getting back on this trail, the thing that we have to start any discussion about this really with is Israel is God's chosen people. And, you know, maybe we ought to dive into that now, because first things first. So let's actually go to the Bible. Let's go to Romans 11, because this is sort of the best source for this. The most authoritative place is what the Bible says about the Jews, right? So in Romans 11, this is Paul talking to the Romans. He says, I say then, has God cast away his people? Certainly not. For I also am an Israelite, the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. God has not cast away his people whom he foreknew. Or did you not know what the scripture says of Elijah, how he pleads with God against Israel, saying, Lord, they have killed your prophets and torn down your altars, and I alone am left, and they seek my life. But what does the divine response say to him? I have reserved for myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to Baal. Even so then, at this present time, there is a remnant according to the election of grace. And if by grace, then, it is no longer of works, otherwise grace is no longer grace. But if it is of works, it is no longer grace, otherwise work is no longer work. So this is Paul's way of saying that he is an Israelite. God has no way cast out the Israelites. And so what does that mean? Well, what then? Israel has not obtained what it seeks, but the elect have obtained it, and the rest were blinded. Just as it is written, God has given them a spirit of stupor, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear, to this very day. And David says, let their table become a snare and a trap, a stumbling block and a recompense to them. Let their eyes be darkened so they do not see, and bow their back always. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? Certainly not. But through their fall, to provoke them to jealousy, salvation has come to the Gentiles. Now, if their fall is riches for the world, and their failure is riches for the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? Okay, so in that paragraph, I'm going to reread that paragraph, and there's plenty more here. You can keep reading Romans 11, but in that paragraph is the crux of what I want to sort of explore here. He says, I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? Certainly not. But through their fall, to provoke them to jealousy, salvation has come to the Gentiles. Now, if their fall is riches for the world, and their failure riches for the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? Okay, so this is basically Paul's way of saying, and this is directly in the Bible. Anyone who believes that the Bible is authoritative, who claims to be a Christian, should just agree with this. It should just be, oh yeah, the Bible says that Israel is God's chosen nation, so it is.
Yes, but if I'm looking at that, I should be very cautious in my understanding that this is old writing, pre-Second Temple destruction kind of time frame, and the description of an acceptable fall of the Jews is not an eradication, and it is so that they can come back from their envy to salvation, which would describe a winning in the end. It could be mistaken that the expectation is that the example of the sacrifice is the beauty of the situation and not the overcoming the sacrifice as the beauty of the situation. I read it as overcoming.
Well, there is no reading it any other way. It specifically says that their fullness will be rich. If their failure was riches to the Gentiles, how much more will their fullness be? That specifically says the nation of Israel. And if you're wondering that's who he's talking about, he starts out by saying that in the chapter, which is why I read the beginning of it. He says, I even am a son of Abraham. So it's like he's speaking specifically of the people Israel. He is actually addressing this replacement theology that we're dealing with today. He is dealing with it specifically here. So if you're a Christian, you have to accept Romans 11, or you're not a Christian. You aren't following the Bible. Jesus will never do anything that goes against his word. God will never do anything that goes against his word. It will agree with that. If you're a Christian, you have to accept that Israel is God's chosen nation. If you don't, then you are carrying his name in vain. You are not a Christian. You are something else. Now, you know, that's between you and God. That isn't my job. If you as a listener are in that place, get right with him. That isn't my job to tell you what to do. But I am telling you that that is what it says. You go read it yourself. A plain reading is easy. And I had someone who is a Christian, says he is a Christian, insists to me recently via Twitter that, well, if that's the case, then how come nobody read it that way until recently? And I'm like, dude, that's what it says. Like, what, people couldn't read until recently? It doesn't matter. If you can't read the words on the page and take their plain meaning, then I don't care what your tradition says. I don't care what your history says. It doesn't matter.
I would say that it does flow if the people of the past read it in a particular way and things were happening in God's way, and that was for the fullness of the prediction to be manifest. Again, there's nothing that doesn't line up. They were reading it for what was correct in their time. We've had the conversation before that was not at fault for doing what God said to do directly in his face. So,
well, and I guess what I'm saying is that I reject that premise. I don't think they ever did read it differently. I'm saying that idea, yes, maybe there were people in the past who ignored Romans, just as there are people today who ignore Romans. I'm sure that's true in history, but the fact that it's there and it has been there the whole time and it's very plainly spelled out means that we have no excuse not to read what is there. That's all I'm saying.
Correct. But even,
so, yeah.
Even reading it, if I were reading it appropriately in where the world existed in its process and you were following the laws of the land and doing all the correct Christian practices, it wasn't your position to change the state of the Jews 800 years ago. It wasn't. It was your chance to take in what was happening and see that God
right.
Was. So,
okay, I see where you were going with that. Yeah, I'm with you on this. Yeah, so, no, it is God's timing for his people to be reassembled in their proper place. It is God's job to arrange it all. It is not our job to make these things happen. It's our job to follow and to obey when the time is right to do the things he tells us to do. Yes, 100% with you. What I'm trying to address here is this replacement theology notion that somehow the church replaced Israel as God's people. That is not what it says. Paul specifically knocked that on the head. You can't read the Bible in a serious way and disagree with what I just said. You can't. It's like trying to claim that words... Okay, so let me make this comparison. Anyone who claims that the Christian church replaced Israel in God's esteem is doing the same thing as people who claim that the Bible does not speak against homosexuality. They're taking the words of the Bible and trying to make them say something they don't say because it doesn't fit the worldview they like. Stop it.
Okay. I would also say that we are backed up from the non-Israeli perspective. It's not that anything what might have been taken away from the Jews, but we know that the New Jerusalem will have a space for the Israelite and a space for the Gentile. So the Gentile will be rewarded for their great works, but that won't take away from the gift already given to them.
Well, either way, the point is that I'm just trying to knock this replacement theology on the head at the very beginning so that we can get into... Because now I'm about to contradict myself in a lot of ways, and that's sort of difficult to. Before I do that, before I lay out what is actually wrong right now that is making so many people anti-Semitic, I have to deal with this thing that says it's okay to be anti-Semitic. It's not okay to be anti-Semitic. It's not okay to say that God's people isn't Israel. That's not okay to do. They are. And those who bless Israel, he will bless. Those who curse Israel, he will curse. I bless God's people. Okay, now we can get into laying some groundwork for some other conversation, which is actually another question you brought up. Do you want to just restate the question, if you don't mind, that we talked about before this? And then I'll sort of lay out what I'm thinking.
Sure. So this is drawing on a parable of the Bible to understand the situation. And for all of us that are of an age that you've got children that, that raise up and move out of the house and become their own household, I am bringing in this. Yep.
Quick point. Parable is a story that is not specifically true.
Oh.
A Bible story is just what you're talking about. You're talking about the story of Jacob and Laban, right?
Right, Jacob and his stepfather.
Yeah, yeah.
So at the end of the long story,
or not his father-in-law.
Father-in-law.
Yes. Yeah.
So he, through the passages in the Bible, goes to a faraway land from far from his home, finds a woman that is the perfect woman for him, arranged by God, works very hard for a decade or 20 years for the first.
It ends up being 7 years for the first one, 7 years for the second one, and then...
And then it's still... Things aren't running smoothly enough for him to walk away in peace with his wife. And so he runs away. And then so his father-in-law meets him on the road while running away. And they have a conversation to come to peace as an adult standing on his own, a new nation, and an existent nation. So that's where I'm bringing in this. We have Israel as a new nation growing up to be self-sufficient as a mature nation. Will we end up in... what happened to Jacob and his father-in-law, where they draw a line and say, from this line is yours, from this line is mine, and we aren't mixing our houses, we are drawing a line in the sand. And that was appropriate and biblical.
Yeah, and you're likening that to the modern world, where we have Israel going and doing things that are sort of against America's interest, even though we're basically supporting them to a huge degree in all the things they're doing.
And not to speak against the Israeli people in any way, shape, or form, but the Israeli government in action for the purposes of whatever a government does. We certainly aren't happy with all the things that our government does either. So I'm not pointing a finger at Jews here, but as a governmental entity of a nation, can one nation deal with another nation in a real world way, trying to hearken back to a family relation, right? You can't hearken back to a family relation when it comes down to passing nuclear weapons around, right? You can't.
So I have two thoughts or two places I want to go here. One is to speak directly to what you just said. And then the other one, and this may have to wait till after the break, I don't know, is to sort of speak to the answer to, well, or to sort of speak to what is actually wrong with the Jews right now, which is a serious question and it needs to be spoken to, because one of the things that we can't do is we can't just say, oh, if you say anything bad about Israel, you're evil or you're canceled. We can't do that. Instead, we have to talk about the things that are wrong there that make it valid to have problems with what's going on. And that isn't just the government. There's actually more to it than that. But let's get into the government thing first. First off, right now we have an American empire. And I know you don't like the wording. I know you don't like that the way I conceptualize that. But that's the way I see it. And what that means is that we don't have a normal relationship with anybody else in the world. We don't have a normal relationship with Canada. We don't have a normal relationship with Ukraine. We don't have a normal relationship with Russia. We're almost looking at Russia and China as sort of wayward children at this point. We're almost looking at them as sort of, rebellious sort of vassals that have gone and done their own thing, and they ought to be doing things our way instead. And I don't think that while that situation is still true, there is any way we can have any kind of equal relationship between us and other nations. It doesn't work that way. We have vassals and we have America, and we don't have, and then we have enemies who are in rebellion against America and should be vassals. And that is a really twisted, crappy situation. Even if you just look at it as an economic situation instead of a military one, it's still a crappy situation. So it makes things very murky when it comes to Israel. Now, one of the things that we do have to say here is that in a very real sense, Israel is the only civilized nation in its neighborhood. They're the only nation in the Middle East that isn't a freaking barbaric mess. And that kind of matters, right? As far as even if we did have an equal relationship, even if it wasn't an American empire, they are actually a natural ally in a lot of ways, because they believe the way we believe about most things in the world, or that was true up until, you know, the American society started turning into a disaster area. But I digress here. The point is still just that our empire situation is a problem. Okay, then you get to the question of the Israeli government and what we could say about that. Their national government is not synonymous with God's people. And so if you and I as brothers start, you know, having one of us goes and starts doing things that are kind of not so great, is it the other one's job to say, oh yeah, you're fine, you keep doing you. You got to do when we're going doing things that are not so great? No, really, it's our job to say, dude, this is not so great, and I'm not going to support you in this not so great thing that you're doing. I love you, I'm still your brother, but you don't get to just go do not so great things without me standing here saying, don't do this thing, right? Sure. Okay, so that same relationship should apply between nations in a sense. We should not be supporting our allies even in doing things that are reprehensible things. We should be speaking up about that if we're actually, you know, a moral agent. And there are a lot of people who are going to argue that nations aren't moral agents except in the interests of their own people. And I don't buy it. I think that that's a postmodern atheistic way of looking at things, and I don't like it. But
you can look at the invasion of the sea peoples on Egypt and see how sticking together has the nations that survived, and trying to be selfish in the moment caused the ones that were selfish to disappear.
Right? Yeah.
Right. There you go.
Right. Well, that's just a fact. That's just the way it works. But either way, the point is, as a moral agent, you have to say, no, what this ally of mine is doing is not a good thing. I may not come out and nuke them for it, but I'm also not going to say, yeah, you're doing a good thing when they're not doing a good thing. You gotta call it the way it is. Okay. Now, this does pertain to the situation in Gaza, but that's a huge ball of wax that's really hard to parse out. We talked about that for like our first 10 episodes. We explored that whole thing here and there. And basically the boiling it down, if you don't mind if I do, well, the conclusion we came to is that Israel didn't have a lot of choice. The culture of the people who are in Gaza is so toxic and awful that they had to do something. And the best thing they could do is bring it under their direct control and require the people there to be re-educated in some sense in order to fix the culture, because there's nothing else. It's a constant problem, and they can't just let it be. It isn't okay. So if that's the case, then there's also the fact that Gaza is probably the biggest hotspot for Nephilim bloodlines remaining in the world, and that there is also a very serious spiritual stronghold there, because that chunk of Israel was never taken away from the native peoples when Joshua and Moses came back into the land. They never actually gained control of that. And so the enemy still got a stronghold there, and it has to be broken somehow. And that's a real problem. And until you see things through a spiritual lens, you're not going to have a good perspective. What were you going to say? We need to take a break, but I want to hear.
I'll ask the question and let's answer it when we get back.
Okay.
Trying to pull this back to a nation dealing with a nation. Imagine the Polynesian Islands, the Sri Lankan kind of areas, being mad at America, and more specifically Bill Gates, but generally America, and denying themselves fertilizers and this, that, or the other, whatever bad-mouthing they do of the country, having a correlation to how we then treat that country, and that being different, I think, with Israel being able to say whatever they feel like whenever they like because of a special relationship, that something like Sri Lanka, we just, okay, you don't want to eat, then we won't feed you. Okay. Right? We don't do that with Israel.
With that, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back. As you can probably tell from the backdrop, there are new things happening here. This is my new sound studio for recording audiobooks. It's not quite done, but it's done enough that I can record an ad in it, and that's exciting. I also have an anthology that I'm just finishing now. It should be coming out real soon. I have book two in the Bright Star series is basically finished, other than some professional edits and the publishing, and I'm pushing on that pretty hard. I'm hoping that there will be news on that one in the near future. When it comes to audiobooks, I'm planning on recording both the anthology and Bright Star. And folks, I need support and help now more than ever. Bright Star is doing just fine. I'm perfectly happy with it, and I am expanding both my ground game and my marketing game, and things are just growing. But the best recommendation is a recommendation from a friend. So if you like what you see on Modern Apocrypha, take this as a recommendation to you. Bright Star is worth your time. And if you've read it and you like it, recommend it to somebody. Help me out getting the word out about this series. And be on the lookout. More's coming soon. Energemetra6.com, E6universe.com, promo code Israel, 10% off.
Hello, Modern Apocrypha listeners. I'd like to take a moment to lift up North Arrow Coffee. If you're like me, you enjoy quite a bit of coffee, and North Arrow has a lot of really good coffees. But they're also following their very own North Star to support pro-life organizations. At North Arrow, 15% of all sales go towards life, not just for a limited time, but for a reason. So, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can use the code E6 at the North Arrow web store and save 10% today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everybody.
And so, to start out, could you restate that question for me? Because I didn't quite get it the first time.
Sure. So this kind of lends itself back to the idea that my disagreement that America is an empire in that way. We have somewhere like Sri Lanka is a specific case where we've seen that they've put out warrants for the arrest of big businessmen, and they would like us out of their way so that they can go back to starving with eating grass because they pray to the grass. Right? They've got a cultural reason for the foods they eat. And our response is, okay, starve. Right? That's okay. Right? It's not up to us. Whereas our relationship with Israel is a little bit different, where we take the extra time to say, hey, we don't think that's a good idea because, and we try to convince them more directly, as opposed to most places in the world, except for those places where we've gotten like military bases or whatever, where we demand something. Most places we're offering help and happy to get that out of the way. That's my opinion.
Okay, so plenty there we could dive into. It would take a whole episode to actually do that. Maybe we should do that sometime. Maybe we should talk about the American Empire. But in this case, I would just say that I don't see that we treat anybody with any particularly set of policies or anything after World War II. It's all like exigencies of the moment every single time. But either way, in Israel's case, there are very special things going on. There's no question. And it's because of, there's a big chunk of that that's because of the dispensationalism that was brought into the U.S. And that is a valid criticism that the replacement theology folks tend to level at dispensational people. And I'm not one of those. I don't actually claim any particular set of beliefs in that area, but that is a valid criticism, is that dispensationalism was used to create a culture of Christianity in the U.S. to say that everything Israel does, we need to get behind, doesn't matter what, and we're always pro-Israel all the time. And I'm not, well, based on the conversation we just had, I'm not there. Now, what I wanted to dig into here for the rest of this is this idea that there is actually a problem with the Jews right now. And I say this as someone who blesses Israel. who blesses God's people. There is actually a problem, and that problem is that they are not Christians. And so what that leads to is all sorts of grief for everyone involved. Now, as Paul said, the fact that we have an opportunity to know Christ because they are not Christians is a blessing to us, no question. And that the Jewish return to Christ has been put off until the time when the fullness of the Gentiles comes in, that matters. That's important. That's a blessing to us. But that doesn't mean that the Jews aren't out there using their God-given status as his chosen nation to do some pretty crummy things while they're not Christians, because they are. And that's a real problem. And so I come back to this whole thing of if they're being separated from God is a blessing from us, how much more their restoration? We know that they are going to be restored. We hope that the time for that is not too far away, though it could be a very difficult time, because we know that the time of the end of the age is the time of Jacob's trouble, is what they call it. And that is the time spoken of in the book of Revelation, and the time spoken of it as people call it the end times. What it is it's the end of the age, because we got another 1,000 years before we could even, you know, before we'll see the new heaven and new earth. But either way, it doesn't matter. The point here is that right now there are a lot of Jews running around making a lot of mischief in a lot of ways because they have rejected Christ. And the other thing that we have to remember here is that when God chose the nation of Israel, all of the good things that being associated with God puts into a culture sort of became their birthright. It's like, as Americans, we expect that what we touch is going to flourish at some level because God has blessed us because we followed Christ. And oh my gosh, what the Jews touch tends to flourish because God blesses it, because he is, you know, he still remembers his chosen people. His promises don't go away. And then at the same time, they had thousands of years before Christ, where God was blessing them and teaching them and leading them into good places. And that creates a residual effect, right? It's like if you're eating right for 20 years and then you spend 10 years, 5 years, whatever, not eating right, you're still going to have a healthier baseline you're operating from because you came from a place that was good. And yeah, that deteriorates over time some, but it's still a place that was good. And so this culture that is the Jewish culture that we, what would I say, that we still observe in action around the world that blessed people, is actually kind of important, man. It's like, and let me give you some concrete examples here. When you look at how much of the world is run by the Jews, which is a stupid way to put it, it's because of that blessing that God put on them. It's because they had this culture that brought them to a place where their methods of reasoning, the way they see the world, all of the things about their culture are better things because they were, you know, the ones carrying that flag of God's chosen people for so long, and because they still are God's chosen people, and that makes them more capable of doing bad things and more capable of doing good things. So we see Hollywood right now, which essentially had been run by Jewish people for a very long time. I'm not going to claim that was a conspiracy. I don't necessarily think it was. In fact, I think that the way we look at it, there are people who would claim it's a conspiracy, but that's kind of a sideways way of approaching it, because just the fact that their culture tends to make them have this sort of in-group preference to give their friends nepotistic rewards here and there doesn't make it a conspiracy, right?
And I don't even believe that would be a valid allegory of what happened in Hollywood, because it was Charlie Chaplin and the great black and white artists that made it popular. And it was the culture of the Jewish mentality of treasuring fame of some sort that made millions upon millions of young people want to go be directors and movie stars and, right, and to be seen.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you. But by the same token, one of the charges that is constantly leveled against the Jews by anti-Semites is this idea that their culture of having these backroom sort of deals in their synagogues where they are nepotistic and they take care of their own is somehow a conspiracy. And I don't think you can go there exactly. I don't think that that's entirely true or very... or very useful. I think it's a way of that the enemy uses to sort of make things worse than they already are. When the reality is, it isn't like there's some cabal there exactly. It's just that they have this culture of helping out their friends, and their friends happen to all get into places of power when they're in places of power because they help out their friends. Okay, well, yeah, you know what? Name me a place in the world that doesn't have a good old boy network of some kind.
Sure. And then I would almost just argue against the point in the first place, because among the people that were at Hitler's side were some very wealthy Jews.
Yes,
George Soros is not working for the average Jew in New York, right? They're not.
Oh, no.
They're not a homogenous group. They're not one thing.
Homogenous is what you're saying.
Thank you.
Right, and there's no monolithic agenda there, not at all. And that's sort of what I'm saying is people who claim a conspiracy assume a monolithic agenda, and there is no monolithic agenda. That's stupid. Okay. So going on from there, though, there are still a whole bunch of people who, because they are culturally and religiously Jewish, have rejected their Messiah and are causing a whole lot of grief for the world. And that's something that we can't deny or turn away from. We actually need to recognize that and say, yeah, man, these people are blessed by God, and they're using that in ways that are not necessarily good for everybody. They're sometimes pretty bad, and they're still God's chosen people, and he still loves them. And that really sucks right now, because they're able to do a whole lot of harm in what they're doing, more than they would be if they weren't blessed by God. But the fact that God doesn't take that blessing away, and he promises to basically convert all of the Jews to Christianity who don't end up dead, is kind of important, and we can't forget that part. And if he thinks that it's the right thing to do, who are we to argue?
That's fair. That's fair. Well, and to assume that you're in a different place in the book than you might be, right? To assume you know where you are is a big failure or a big mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea that you know, and then if you've got the message of what you're supposed to do, then nobody's going to tell you otherwise. You got it. But if you believe you got it and you are out there, you know, pushing for your benefit and justifying it as a word of God or some back, you're backed outside of your own selfishness, you're just being dishonest with yourself.
Well, okay. And so from here, one of the points I want to make real fast is about how screwed up the current Jewish religion is. There are a lot of people who assume that the Jews' current religion is Old Testament Judaism. It is not. It is something very different that is actually very mystery religion adjacent. Okay, that Judaism today is adjacent to mystery religion. And it's because of things that went on shortly after the time of Christ, and partly because Jesus came, where the enemy was able to exert some influence and did some things that were pretty screwed heinous. Up there. Huh? Yeah, heinous. Yes, absolutely. And so what we have right now is we have a pretty messed up situation. And I actually wanted to kind of bring an example of that for this episode. So I'm gonna do a screen share here, and I want to watch a little short video.
Okay, and who is this that we're bringing in?
It is a rabbi.
Okay.
And I don't actually know who he is. I don't know all that much about him. What I do know is that the perspective he's expressing is one that is very it exemplifies how sort of scary and sideways what they believe actually is right now. And I want to draw that out. So let me just pull that up. All right. And I'm going to start it here. So it's about a 5-minute video. I'm going to play most of this, but I'll stop if you have.
But like the first non-Jewish Messiah, Cyrus, who was chosen to assist the Jews in reestablishing themselves in the land of Israel after their 70-year exile in Babylon, the current non-Jewish Messiah was chosen to be of service to the Jewish people and the Jewish Messiah. President Trump's right ear was grazed in a symbolic gesture of Exodus 21:6, where the Torah states that a servant who wants to remain with his master needs to have his right ear pierced. Trump was designated as God's servant and anointed one, just like Cyrus the Great almost 2,400 years ago. We have clarified in several videos that the absolute deadline for the redemption is by the end of the Jewish year 5,787, which corresponds to October 2nd, 2027, 1,167 days from today. Thus, the redemption will surely occur during Donald Trump's tenure. And I have good reason to believe Donald Trump was chosen to be the one to redeem the sins of Esav through offering his assistance in rebuilding the Holy Temple on the Temple Mount and establishing the Jewish kingdom over all of mankind in Jerusalem. Perhaps it is no accident that the numeric value of Donald Trump in Hebrew is the same as Messiah, son of David, Mashiach ben David, 424. However, Donald Trump is mistaken if he thinks he was chosen to make America great again. He will no doubt do a lot of good things to strengthen our economy, protect our borders, and allow religious freedom to flourish. But America will never become a great country on its own, because Esav's days are numbered. All our elite institutions and centers of power and influence are rotten through and through. The majority of Americans under 30 who are college educated and who are the future leaders of America support the vicious monsters of Hamas rather than the holy and courageous soldiers of the IDF. No human being, even Donald Trump, can reverse this. No. The greatness of America does not lie in its own success. America will be great when the Messiah comes. And the leader of this country, on behalf of all the good people in this country, will humbly present himself to the Jewish Messiah and ask him to accept the United States of America into a new alliance of countries who accept the leadership of the Messiah. A new United Nations will replace the current cesspool that goes by that fraudulent name. A real United Nations, united to serve God, led by the Messiah and based in Jerusalem. And my feeling is that the United States under President Trump will be the first nation to join. The meaning of the MAGA movement needs to be adjusted. America was a great idea, but it was never realized. When the American government under FDR chose not to lift a finger to save the Jews from Hitler's inferno, America was not great. They slammed the door shut even to Jews who miraculously were able to escape from the clutches of Nazi Germany. How great was that? And during the Six-Day War, America sent a spy ship, the USS Liberty, to the Mediterranean to relay vital military information to Israel's enemies. How great was that? Although Trump can make America safer and more prosperous, he cannot make America great. And that is not what he was chosen for. I believe he has a much greater historic role. It's no accident that Trump was anointed by God in Pennsylvania, where the Declaration of Independence was signed. The MAGA movement needs to be tweaked from Make America Great Again to Make America Godly Again. Donald Trump has taken the first step by proclaiming to the whole world that which is clear to anyone who wishes to see. The entire episode on Shabbat of July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania, was clearly orchestrated by God. And the fact that President Trump turned his head a mere second before the shot grazed his ear was clearly miraculous. I believe this man was chosen to be the one to represent Western society in greeting the Messiah in Jerusalem, chosen to bow his head in humility to Mashiach and to offer America's complete unconditional assistance to completely eradicate all of the enemies of the Jews and of God, and in the establishment of the eternal kingdom of the Messiah, Son of David, who will lead all of mankind to lead moral and holy lives. Numbers chapter 24, where it was specifically a non-Jewish prophet, Bilaam, who was chosen to proclaim in the name of God almost 3,300 years ago. I see it, but not now. I perceive it, but not in the near future. A star shall go forth from Jacob, and a staff shall arise in Israel, crushing their enemies and dominating all of mankind. Edom shall be demolished, and Israel shall be triumphant. May we all witness this speedily in our days. Amen.
Okay, so we don't have a ton of time left, but I want to try to pull this apart some. The first point to make here is that the Messiah he's talking about is what we think of as the Antichrist.
Interesting. There's a correlation in the description of the old the Torah Messiah, the Jewish Messiah, as a in correlation to the Christian Antichrist.
No,
I know there's correlations between the Islamic.
No, we're not talking about the Torah. We're talking about the Talmud. We're talking about the corrupted religion of today, not the Jewish religion of the past. So the way we have to think of it is that what they're actually looking forward to still is a Messiah who will come and conquer the world for them. That's what the Jews expected at the time of Jesus. That's what they still expect today. And so what he's saying is that there will come a Messiah who will conquer the world, and Donald Trump will be the first to bend the knee to him. And that's not Jesus. That's not the return of Jesus that they're expecting. They're expecting something else. And we would think of that as being the Antichrist. That's what we would sort of expect to look like.
As I was listening to it, it struck me that my understanding of Revelation, if Trump were to bend the knee to somebody, that would then be crushed by the true Messiah.
Well, and that is what I'm talking about here, is that Jesus Christ is coming back, but it's again going to be much different than what they're expecting right now, because they don't acknowledge him in the first place. And so what they're looking forward to is still the same thing they have been. It's temporal power, and it's going to result in the time of Jacob's trouble, which is the period of Revelation. But, you know, dissecting this video even more than that, this to me was one of the most sort of mind-scrambling lies that I've seen in a lot of ways, because most people are going to take this to mean the return of Jesus in some way, when that's not really what they're thinking. What they're thinking is something totally different, and it has been manipulated by the enemy to be. So when he talks about this, he is speaking using scriptures that we are familiar with, but he's speaking in a frame of mind that is still expecting the Messiah to come to conquer, and he even said it in that video, to crush the temporal enemies of Israel, which, I mean, yeah, that's going to happen at some level, but that was really never quite the purpose of what Jesus was doing. His purpose was to redeem the world. That's a whole different level of thing. And so when what you're expecting is for your Messiah to come back and conquer the world, what you end up with is you're supporting the powers and principalities that play temporal power games. That's the short
version. When you listen to someone like that, does it trigger something in your brain that you're hearing numerology in the explanation?
Numerology is not necessarily a bad thing, in that God has interest in numbers too. He has numbers that he puts forward sort of as, there's like signs and symbols to show that things are complete and effective. But when you try to use numerology to justify a position, that's a bit of a different beastie. That's like trying to take the planets in the sky, the stars in the sky are there for signs of seasons and, you know, things like that. We know that the times of what's going on, there will be signs in the sky of the times at the end of the age. Does that mean we should try to foretell the future based on the signs in the sky? Well, no, that's actually, we're told to stay away from that, that that's divination and that's not good for us. Numerology is sort of in the same camp. The fact that numbers are significant is cool, but it isn't something that we should be trying to make into something it's not.
But it's not something that automatically triggers you as a mystery religion identifier?
When someone is using numerology to try to prove something, that tends to, it does tend to make me think in that direction, yeah. But that's not even a question. The Talmudic religion is a mystery religion. So what? They're still God's chosen people. They're still the Jews. And anti-Semitism is still not a good thing. We need to pray for the salvation of Israel. We need to pray for the fullness of the Gentiles, and we need to bless Israel, but not say everything they do is good. We need to have a real world view of what's going on and be clear eyed and understand what God's doing and be patient to wait on his time, even though it costs us something to allow these bad things to go on, because it does. Is there anything more about that video that you're interested in pulling apart? Because we're coming up right on the end of our time here. I do have one sort of thing that I want to speak to there, if that's all right.
Please.
When he addresses specifically what he thinks is going to happen, he says, I think that Trump was instituted not to make America great again, because America never was great. Well, he's missing the fact that America was the most Christian nation in the world, and that's what made it great. When he's saying that Trump was instituted to bow the knee to the Messiah, he might be right, man. He might be correct that Trump's role is to bring America into the correct relationship with the final system that is coming about. But if so, we're going to see the American currency devalued. We're going to see America fall out of power, and we're going to see another system come into power if that's the case. And it could be that that system has, I don't know.
Well, reorder what is existent right now in the United Nations and the favored status that America enjoys in that institution. If you were to create another institution, and one of our general problems with a World Economic Forum in the first place, or a world union of any kind, is that you can only get there by supplementing your sovereignty to that system. You can't right. be sovereign into, you can't have dual citizenship as a nation. Right.
Right. Well, and I tend to think that we're headed toward the whole corporate world order, not the political world order that a lot of people do. And I could be wrong about that, but that seems to me to be pretty clear. So I don't know. Anything else you want to go into here?
Just that Christ never asked hatred in your heart. In none of his days, in none of his speech, in none of his action, he never asked for hate in your heart.
And in fact, he said to bless your enemies and to do good to those who harm you and to bless those who curse you and all of those things. And so when you find people who are cursing the Jews or hating the Jews, you know that the enemy is present there.
Absolutely. And I'll say one last thing about the specificity of the Jewish people not being homogenous, that as it happens, some of the most tragic things that we do to each other are in the family. Some of the worst things that are happening from and to the Jews are by the Jews.
As always, there is that synagogue of Satan, those people who are sort of come under the power of the enemy who are in that nation. And that's
quite frankly, most of us wouldn't dare.
Wouldn't dare what?
Offend God.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Well, with that, everybody, I hope that was somehow useful to you. I hope that God blesses your week, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks for being here, guys. Thanks so much.